Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 7 of the Damhorse Toys Family Podcast. My name is Chris Damhorst, and on today's show, we are lucky enough to continue our interview with our speech pathologist, Lori Savage Grayson, from episode 6 about ear infections and their effect on the development of speech and language for young children. So without further ado, let's go to the interview. Well, let's go into one topic that I know every parent has had to deal with probably on multiple occasions, and those are ear infections. And I probably didn't have as much of an idea as I did until after I talked to you about the impact that ear infections can have on speech and language development, and how problematic they can be, you know, during that time frame of speech and language development. So let's talk a little bit about that if we could. I think that's going to be really, really helpful stuff.
Right. And I think one of the main things parents need to know is that the eustachian tube when the children are young is more horizontal in its placement in the child's body and smaller. And so fluid tends to build up because it can't drain. The eustachian tube The eustachian tube equalizes pressure from the outside world to inside the ear. And so that passage connects the middle ear to the back of the throat behind the nose. And so that is where fluid drains.
Okay.
But in a young child, with the eustachian tube being horizontal and with it being very small, fluid builds up in there often.
Okay.
Unfortunately, too often.
Okay.
And ear infections are, of course, the most common illness during childhood.
Right.
And so the ear infection happens when the middle ear becomes inflamed, and you can either have that in one ear or in both of the ears. When the fluid is accumulating, sometimes it actually sits there and does not become infected, and then you won't have any signal from your child that they're in pain, and you won't know the fluid is there. If they have an infection, they typically will get a fever, be pulling on their ears, they'll be in pain, and that gets you to the doctor.
Right.
A child that's got the fluid with no infection may go days, weeks, a while without an infection developing, and you don't know that they've got that fluid in their ear, but it's still affecting their hearing. And so it would be similar to either being underwater, or if you get water in your ear, just having that fluid even on the outside of your ear, muffling it enough that you're not hearing things as clearly as if there were no fluid.
Would a doctor's checkup catch that? Do you know if they a regular checkup would that catch that if that's in there? Because I think
they can at some point they can see the fluid build up behind the eardrum, and that's what they'll see. If the eardrum is bulging, then there's a lot of pressure on the eardrum. And so that's why we need to be vigilant, because we want to protect that eardrum. We don't want the eardrum popping or bursting on its own to relieve the pressure from the buildup of the fluid, which is why a lot of children, if they get recurrent ear infections and the medication, you know, may work temporarily, but they immediately get another infection, may get the pressure equalizing tube. So they'll actually have surgery. The ENT or the otolaryngologist performs the surgery, puts the tube in, and that allows the eardrum not to have that extra pressure from the fluid.
Okay.
And that protects it. And then as the child gets older, PE tube may fall out on its own or may have to be surgically removed, but it's put in there to protect the eardrum from bursting on its own, because anytime something bursts, you can't control how it opens. So you can't control the tear, and then you end up with scar tissue and other complications that can, you know, occur. So we really want to watch and make sure. But when you go in for your checkup, that's one of the first things that they will do with, you know, our young children, is always check their ears. And not all little people like to have their ears checked, but it is an important part of the medical exam, because
yeah,
we really don't want that fluid in there. We don't want the child's hearing to be temporarily affected if we can keep that from happening.
Yeah, the children that you see, is that a large percentage that you can point to that issue and say that was the concern that they had for their speech or language issues, and then once they get the tubes in and it clears out, then you see them recovering, you see their speech and language starting to improve?
Well, I can say that I have probably equal amounts of children that come in without documented hearing infections or ear infections as I do with ones that do have ear infections. And I think that sometimes complicates things because parents, I think as parents, we like to know what causes problems.
Right.
Some children with frequent ear infections may or may not ever develop communication problems, but I think the research shows that frequent ear infections put you at a higher risk for early speech and language developmental problems.
Okay.
I think if they're treated quickly and we don't have that prolonged period of not being able to hear clearly,
right,
then we have a better chance of not using or having that as a contributing factor.
Okay.
But then I have children that come in that the parents can't document any ear infections, and they may have the same profile as a child who's had a lot of ear infections.
So
we can think, well, maybe your child had fluid but no infection, or maybe there's another common factor that, you know, we're not looking at. But certainly, I think for us, we know that having fluid in your ear is not a good thing, you know, long term for speech and language development. So we want to make sure that we address those problems immediately.
Okay. Do you recommend a medical checkup first before you kind of dive into the issues to make sure that all the mechanics of the ears are working before, you know, start therapy?
I think pediatricians and primary care physicians will often refer to us. And then, at least for my practice, we would always suggest the parents consider going to an audiologist to have their hearing checked. I would say that for my population, in my private practice, most of the children don't have permanent hearing losses. They don't have sensory neural hearing losses, but they may have conductive hearing losses, which are related to the fluid and the middle ear infection. Some doctors will refer them first to have their hearing checked before they refer to us. Sometimes it's kind of a all-in-one package. These are the professionals I want you to see, or the primary care may send them to the ear, nose, and throat doctor first or the otolaryngologist first. I may get the referral from the otolaryngologist.
Okay.
So depending on how long this pattern's been going, may be the difference between if the speech and language problem is related to that, but it certainly can be and is often a contributing factor in problems that we see in young children.
Okay, and that really moves us on to auditory processing. So if they can't hear because of some type of hearing issue, that ultimately affects their ability to process auditorily, I guess. Is that right?
It does. If you're not hearing things clearly, and you have, we're going to just stick with hearing and ear infections for our purposes today.
Okay.
If you have that occurring and you've got fluid in your ears and you're not hearing clearly, you're at risk for speech and language developmental problems.
Okay.
But again, not every child that has an ear infection has a speech or language or communication problem, and vice versa. That every child that has a speech, language, or communication problem has documented recurrent ear infections.
Okay.
In terms of auditory process, the definition of auditory processing is actually the inability to understand spoken language in a meaningful way in the absence of a hearing loss. So, may be that this child has had recurrent ear infections and has a language problem as a result and hasn't heard consistently, hasn't heard clearly, and has, when they come to our office, has, you know, delayed vocabulary, maybe isn't talking at the level that we would expect, but may not necessarily be diagnosed with an auditory processing disorder.
Okay.
So they are different things, but they're not mutually exclusive.
Okay.
So when we have children who misunderstand frequently, have difficulty following direction, don't seem to pay attention when you call their name or when you ask them to do something, I wouldn't put that at the front end of the list because we're talking about people that are 3 to 5.
Right.
And so, who may be busy doing something more important. You know, but you really see just a lag in their ability to understand and process what you're asking them. They may look at you and not respond, or they may do the wrong thing, get the wrong item, get some of what you asked them to do, not all of what you asked them to do.
Okay.
And, you know, at that point, again, this is when the audiologist, you know, would be a great person to pull into the team to check their hearing acuity, how they hear at each frequency and their hearing at the loudness level that we would expect. And they can also test for processing skills.
Okay. Okay.
And then also the speech pathologist, the speech language pathologist would come in and do the language aspect and check speech sound development. And then together we would look and see, does this child have a auditory processing problem? Is affecting their ability to, you know, follow directions and function? Because what will happen is if a child misunderstands you, they may give you the wrong answer as well.
Okay.
And so they will give you the wrong answer if they misunderstand you.
Yeah.
So then you may think that it's an expressive problem. You know, like, why are they saying that? And in fact, what it is they didn't understand what you were asking. And so we have to look at all of this combined. And it is a whole array of challenges in and of itself. And usually these problems are identified with a child who's entering school or has already been in school.
Okay. Okay.
So,
my next question that I had for you was going to be kind of a general one. And I know this is probably going to be one that's going to be kind of tough to answer, but what are some of the kind of the trouble signs that you see? And I know we talked a little bit about, you know, age 4, that some red flags that come up. And I know that's a really broad spectrum, but are there some things that we can kind of, that you could lay out for us in layman's terms that maybe we should be concerned about or things that you could tell a parent to look for essentially when we're talking about, you know, speech delay, language delay?
I think that everybody needs to just remember that even young infants are responsive, attentive, and communicative. I don't mean in at the levels that we discussed. And so you want to see their attention increasing. You want to see their responsiveness increasing. You want to see their understanding increasing. You want to see more speech sounds coming in. You want to see their ability to use language become more developed, and you want to have vocabulary development, phrase development, all of those things occurring. If I find that parents, by the time they find me,
mm-hmm.
Know that something is not right.
Okay.
And most parents just either if it's comparing it to another person, another child, or if they have just frustrations of their own, they know that this is not what, maybe they've been online reading.
Uh-huh.
They know that this is not what their child is not where they're supposed to be.
What's the average age that they normally catch that at? Or what's the average age of your patient that normally comes in? Is it, because I mean, I can't imagine that you get a whole, you know, run of 3-month-olds or 6-month-olds or, you know, 1-year-olds.
Right.
Is it, it's
right.
more,
there
it's
are
more.
Other groups. You know, where we are here in town, there are, in most states, I think there are early intervention programs.
Uh-huh.
And so a lot of times children will be referred to the 0 to 3 programs for developmental screenings.
Okay.
And they may get picked up through that. I would say that our average age is somewhere between 2 and 3. And the complaint that family would come in would be, either my child is talking and I don't understand, or my child's not talking enough, or my child doesn't seem to have any words, or my child is frustrated because he can't tell me what he wants.
Uh-huh.
And that would be for that age range. That's usually what I hear when parents call me.
Uh-huh.
You know, and as we move up, when we get to, you know, 3 to 5, we may hear more about speech intelligibility. My child's talking and has long sentences, but again, now I can't understand what my child is saying because may not have all the speech sounds in the right places. And so we can't understand what he's saying, or grandparents can't understand him, or the teacher can't understand him. And so it may come in more as a speech articulation problem.
Uh-huh.
Or possibly a stuttering concern. Or one of the other areas that deal a lot with is social interaction skills. So children who tend to play by themselves or don't have that turn-taking
capability.
So social interaction with their peers. And so either they play by themselves, or when they're playing with friends, they're not playing amicably.
Okay. Okay.
We do work with a lot on social interaction and social communication skills.
Yeah. Yeah. So what is there a particular moment when parents should really think about taking their child in? I guess that would be a question that I would have is like, how do you know? I mean, it's so hard. You have like, you know, 2 to 3, 3 to 4, 4 to 5, and they could be anywhere on that range.
Right.
It's, I guess, is it a gut feeling that you kind of suggest to your parents, or I guess they know? I mean, I guess you really know when there's an issue.
Well, I would say, you know, by a year to 18 months, you know, we're looking for children to have some single words.
Okay.
And absolutely, you know, the first thing I always look for is, what is the child's understanding? What is the child's, you know, receptive language? How is that developing? Because I often have children who understand their understanding exceeds their ability to express themselves.
So
the first thing we look at is their understanding of language, single word vocabulary, concepts, grammar, and then we look to see how do they express themselves. And again, that's where the symbolic play comes in. I may have a child that is very difficult to understand, but may be able to have an elaborate play scheme developed if I give them the right toys and will tell me a story through their play. And so I know that the child is able to sequence and storytell, but maybe has a speech sound articulation problem or has an expressive word finding problem. And so we look at all those different aspects. I find that most parents, at least now, have either been on the internet, have talked to their primary care physician. I think if you have a question, not everybody that calls me ends up, you know, as a client of mine. I mean, I spend a lot of time with families answering just those kinds of questions.
Oh, right.
And usually what I'll suggest is, you know, go see your primary care. They usually are running some developmental checklists. If you want to come in, I'll be glad to do an evaluation. Or, you know, here are some resources for you to read. I'll refer them to our national site, our ASHA site. They can look at the charts on there. But most parents will tell me that after they have come in and had the evaluation, whether I have said, you know, your child has a problem and this is what I recommend for intervention, or I say, you know, I think your child's on target for now, or maybe we need to wait 6 months and we'll reevaluate, that they always feel better. And they feel like they have outweighed the fear of testing. I think a lot of parents feel like it's going to be this big, cumbersome, you know, horrible experience for their child.
Oh.
And their child might be stigmatized. And sometimes that's what's holding them back.
Oh, okay. And you can assure, I mean, it's definitely not that. I mean, it can be
evaluation can
happen. The evaluation can happen fairly quickly and very painless.
Right. It's very painless. It's mostly... You know, with a young child, a lot of objects, a lot of play, a lot of, you know, we're using books, we're making it fun. And, you know, it may take more than one session if we have a child that's, you know, not able to sustain for the entire evaluation. But I think if you have a concern, you know, you should try and find a certified speech language pathologist in your area and either have a consultation or set up the evaluation and know what you should be doing, because you may just get recommendations for home. We can't recommend just based on a phone call. I mean, we need to actually see the little person in front of us, you know, and to really do right by the family. But there are guidelines that we can refer families to, and we can go from there.
Yeah. What type of credentials should they be searching for a speech language pathologist? You mentioned the ASHA site a little bit. That's where parents you think should go first, definitely?
Well, I think that it is a good site. Not everybody is listed. You have to actually put yourself on the list.
Okay.
But ASHA is our national organization, which certifies us. And so I would say that the first thing that parents need to look for is, you know, an ASHA-certified speech language pathologist.
And what does ASHA stand for? I'm sorry.
American Speech Language Hearing Association.
Okay, okay.
The initials or the credentials that go after our name are CCC-SLP. So Certificate of Clinical Competence-SLP for Speech Language Pathologist, or -A if they're an audiologist, because that's the organization for both of our professions.
Okay.
And what that means is that that professional has their master's degree that was in a certified program, has had, you know, hundreds of hours of supervised clinical experience during their master program, passed the national exam that we need to take, and then completed a clinical fellowship year under a certified speech-language pathologist. And then, after that's all done, you turn all that information into ASHA. They review it. You meet all the criteria. You get your certification or your C's. And then you have to keep up your continuing ed or your continuing education
right.
to maintain your certification.
Okay.
But they do have a pro search list, and so it's by states. You can put in your zip code. And again, it will give you at least some people in your, you know, your local region to, and each person lists what their specialty areas are. So it'll say if they see only adults or if they see children. And then the next thing I tell parents to make sure they do is to not only make sure that the person is certified, but make sure the professional is experienced with your child's age group.
Okay.
And what your specific issue is that you're concerned about, because not everybody deals in pediatrics, not everybody deals in stuttering, not everybody deals with oral motor problems, and so you really want to know what their area of expertise is.
Because they can specialize then, I guess, too. A speech-language pathologist can.
Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Okay. Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. Now, I did want to talk a little bit about your organization and the fact that it's celebrating its 20th year in existence, the Children's Communication Center, and that's in Tallahassee, Florida. Tell us a little bit more about that. I know a little bit, but for our audience, definitely kind of give us some background and history on that, because I really thought it was a cool organization and so great that it was celebrating 20 years, you know, since its founding in 1993.
I founded the center in 1993 when I realized we were staying in Tallahassee and we were having our second child and this was going to be our home. And it was founded with the purpose of really serving the 0 to 5 population.
Okay.
Because that was my background from working in different pediatric practices and hospitals. And I had 15 years experience and I felt like I had something that I could offer to the community. And so over the past 20 years, we have seen lots of 0 to 5. And as they've grown, we've grown with them and expanded and now offer services for, of course, adolescents, college students, and even adults. Our banner for our 20-year anniversary is really a compliment back to the community, because I believe that, well, I'll tell you what the banner says, but it's the success of our children. So our children being the children that come to us that we serve and the children, of course, who belong to the families that bring them to us, belong to the different schools that we deal with, the different professionals we deal with. It's really only possible because over these 20 years, we've developed, you know, such good trust and respect and cooperation with each other, with the goal being for each child and each family to get the most out of their services, for us to provide, you know, high quality and well-managed professional services to the families, for us to be able to document the progress, be able to share with the families, you know, what our goals are, have them involved in the programs, provide services in the home, at our center, at the different schools. And so we're everywhere in the community doing, providing our services in the best place for each child. And then, of course, in addition to individual services, we also have group services.
So oh.
We talked a little bit, about our social communication interaction groups that we serve. We do a lot of those groups in preschools where we're actually using board games to teach that interaction pattern, doing a lot out on the playground to teach good playground etiquette. And then we have a show and tell for parents and their young children, which focus on that early gesture and sign language, focusing on early gestures and sign language as part of their early communication development. So not teaching sign language to children who are hearing impaired, but building on the fact that gestures come early in the communicative process and facilitating that. And again, that's a great program for parents and their young children. It gets everybody together, and we usually do that at someone's home. They may develop their own group and call us, and
fantastic.
Or we may match families up. So that's fun. Yeah. So we're doing a lot of different things. We've got summer packages for families that want to make sure their children stay on point while they're off for the summer, because the school systems don't provide services during the summer because they're off.
Right.
Or
right.
Somebody who might want a refresher, or somebody who's trying to get ahead for their fall reading. We have a lot of summer reading around here, so working on summer reading or just getting ready for whatever the next challenge will be
right.
for school in the fall.
Okay,
and
great.
Then, of course, doing your podcast. That's part of our celebration.
Ah, fantastic, which we are super grateful for, absolutely. And now if they want to learn more about the Children Communication Center, your LinkedIn company page definitely has more information about you and your profile. And
I
then-
have. Both right. We've got the company page, which is Children's with the apostrophe S Communication Center, and that's where I am making sure I've got articles for parents to read, new research that's coming out, and then there's my profile page with my bio. The company page has all the different services that we provide. I think we'll answer most questions that parents have. And our web page and our Facebook page is in development, so there's not much there.
Right, but they can still contact you via email, right, if they need to through those pages, I know.
Absolutely.
Okay, great, fantastic. Well, Lori, this has just been an unbelievable wealth of information. I can't thank you enough for sitting down with us today and going over so much information. I think it's really, really going to be helpful to break those things out, because it seems like speech and language is something that's hard to get your arms around without an expert or without someone that you can kind of consult to get an idea of what the problems are. But I think this podcast is going to be super helpful for everyone out there. Again, we're going to take a lot of this information, almost all of it, and put it into a blog post that we're going to have on the site as well. The show notes section are going to have all of Lori's information as far as her contact or LinkedIn page, the Children's Communication Center website address, and all of the contact information that you would need to get in touch with her for any reason. But beyond that, Lori, I can't thank you enough. I know that you did a lot of work in order to put this interview together, and a lot of general research to help me understand, and also I think to help me ask the right questions for sure to keep our listeners on track with what the most important things are when they're dealing with speech and language issues. So thank you again so much. Just been absolutely fantastic.
Well, I appreciate fantastic. You're inviting me, and I really thank you for this opportunity. And I want to encourage parents who are listening or looking at the blog post to contact local speech language pathologists, or to go to ASHA, or again, if they contact me, I will be glad to help them, even if they're not in the state of Florida, to find somebody in their area, or at least find someone who can help them find someone. And that is not a problem at all at my end. I find that to be a large part of what I feel I should be doing, is just helping everybody find the right person for their family and get the answers that they need, for their children.
Sure,
so that is certainly available for everyone.
Okay. Well, great. Well, best of luck and congratulations again on 20 years with the Children's Communication Center. All the hard work I know that you have behind it, you really should be proud, and thank you for everything that you do.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right. And thank you to all of you out there listening today. That's it for our show. All of Lori's information can be found in our show notes section of our blog for this podcast. So if anyone has any questions, please feel free to put them in the discussion forum. We'd love to answer them. That's it for us, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.